Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, text 43. Tatra tamburi samyogam lavate puravate hikam yatate chatato buya samsido kuru nandana tatra. Thereupon, tam, that, buddhi samyogam, revival of consciousness, labhate, gains, puravadehikam, from the previous body, yatate, he endeavors, cha, also, tata, thereafter, Buya, again, Samsido, for perfection, Kuru Nandana, O son of Kuru. Purport, King Bharata, who took his third birth in the family of a good Brahmana, is an example of good birth for the revival of a previous transcendental consciousness. King Bharata was the emperor of the world, and since this time, this planet has been known among the demigods as Bharatvarsha. Formerly, it was known as Ilavritavarsha. The emperor at an early age retired for spiritual perfection, but failed to achieve success. His next life, he took birth in the family of a good Brahmana and was known as Jadavarta, because he always remained secluded and did not talk to anyone. And later on, he was discovered as the greatest transcendentalist by King Rahugana. From his life, it is understood that transcendental endeavors or the practice of yoga never go in vain. By the grace of the Lord, the transcendentalist gets repeated opportunities for complete perfection in Krishna consciousness. So the text again, Tatratam buddhisam yogam lavate purvadehikam yatate chatato buya samsido kuru nandana. And taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. Here the yogi is practicing, but he doesn't get perfection in one life. As it is said in the Nectar of Devotion, even devotional service is generally performed over many lifetimes. The advantage of devotional service is that one begins where one left off. Nehabi kramanashosti pradyavayo navidite swapam apyasidharmasya trayate mahatobayat. That on this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and even a little advancement can protect one from the greatest danger. So sometimes we're thinking, well, here I am in this lifetime, and what happens when I get into my next lifetime? Maybe I'll forget who I am. It's very unlikely we're going to forget who we are. It's more likely we're going to forget who we think we are. It's like when you go to sleep at night, no one really worries. Maybe when I go to sleep, I'll forget who I am. Does anyone have that worry? They can't go to sleep because they're worried about forgetting who they are? No, we happily go to sleep because we're glad to forget who we are for a while. Get some rest from the hard struggle of who we think we are. So simply changing this body simply means that we forget who we are, like going to sleep, and we simply wake up and we think we're someone else. If we become Krishna conscious fully, then we'll know who we are. And therefore, even when we're so-called awake in this body or dreaming, then we'll still remember who we actually are. actually whoever we are, that's eternal. That's who we actually are. And everything else is more or less like a dream. We have our daydream and our night dream. Right now we're daydreaming. We're thinking with this body. We're thinking we're going through so many experiences. The soul, of course, is going through experience, but it's not directly going through the experience. It's just conscious of the experience that this body is going through. It is exactly like watching a movie and identifying with the movie and being so identified with some personality in the movie that one is actually believing that one is either becoming successful or is defeated according to what the character in the movie encounters. So similarly, identifying with this body, we actually believe that we're the hero or the heroine in some kind of drama that's going on. But the fact is, we're simply the observer. And because we're observing, and because of whatever intelligence we deserve, therefore we're able to, this observation is according to whatever our devotional and other material credits are. In other words, if we have material credits, then we see things in a certain way. And if we have less credit, then we see things in a different way. And if we have spiritual credit, then we'll actually see things as they actually are. So Krishna consciousness is the development of spiritual credit. Simplify our existence, purify our intelligence. So whatever intelligence we may have from the material point of view, just like everyone has a particular material intelligence. Someone can stand on one finger. Someone else is expert at singing. Someone else knows how to do mathematics. Everyone has their material intelligence. But spiritual intelligence means that one sees whatever one is doing in relation to Krishna. Ultimately, spiritual intelligence means that one sees that one is simply whatever one thinks he's doing is not, he's actually not doing, it's the material energy or the spiritual energy is doing. And because the spiritual energy is doing, one is desiring that the spiritual energy works. In other words, one desires to please and serve Krishna and his devotee, and therefore the spiritual one becomes under the spiritual energy, and the spiritual energy does everything. Just like the material energy, when we're desiring materially, then the material energy does everything. And when we're desiring spiritually, then the spiritual energy does in proportion to the intensity and the consistency of our spiritual desires, our dovetailing our desires with the spiritual desires, then the spiritual energy takes over and our activities become spiritualized and according to how much we're engaged in Krishna consciousness. And as we become spiritualized, our activities, then gradually the modes of nature that we're situated under become purified, and we can actually perceive things as they really are, rather than as we think they are, under the spell of the illusory energy. So here the learned transcendental Bharat Maharaj, he took different births. First as Bharat Maharaj, then he became a deer. Now generally when one becomes a deer, one forgets. There's no question of the deer thinking, well, by misfortune I became a deer. Deers don't have such psychological hang-ups, as they say. When you're a deer, you're completely happy to be a deer. And when you're eating grass or leaves, whatever the deer eat, you're completely happy. You don't think, oh my God, how did I get this as food? Maybe I can sneak in some ashram and find a samosa somewhere. I'm hungry. This is grass. It tastes like grass. I never ate grass before. This is embarrassing. Maybe there's some salt somewhere. I can put it on the grass. Give it a little taste. No, a deer is completely happy to eat the grass because that's the body it's in. As soon as we get a particular body, everything else follows. A particular taste, everything, according to the consciousness the mind is under, the state of the mind. So generally, according to the state of mind, one gets a suitable body. And when one gets the body of a deer, one has to be trained up, the mind has to be trained up to actually become like a deer or any other species of life. So therefore, that's what the hellish planet is meant for training. After they drag you through the thorny trees and rip off your skin, you're ready for anything, just anything you want. I'll become a deer if that's what I'm supposed to. Just stop this torture. And you say, all right, you want to become a, here's your deer body, and one enters into, one is trained up, you go to deer school in the hellish world, and they train you up to like grass and whatever. To identify oneself with the, be prepared to identify oneself with a deer body and have lower consciousness. One is trained up in the hellish worlds like that. But in this case, Bharat Maharaj was a great devotee. And therefore, although Krishna arranged, he took the body of a deer, it was to teach us, and perhaps to teach Bharat Maharaj, a lesson that no matter how advanced you become in devotional service, up to a certain point, it said that Bharat Maharaj was on the stage of bhava, but the preliminary stage of bhava. If one is actually on the stage of bhava, if one is actually in Uttamadhikari, then there is no chance of falling down. But he was almost practically there. But still, by the workings of the illusory energy, he forgot, due to lack of association with devotees, because he was out in the forest. And because devotees by nature are kind, therefore he took care of this deer cub and got entangled. I mean, nowadays he would be praised for his activities of animal protection. Practically he went to hell, but everyone would appreciate the fact that he took care of a deer cub. Because people have no idea what the standard of existence is, or what the purpose of it is. In any case, this was just, Bharat Maharaj is a deer, was not an ordinary deer. He used to go and listen to the, he went to an ashram in the forest and sit there patiently listening to the talks given by the devotees. And I'm sure he offered the grass, whatever he had, to Krishna. The deer incarnation. There's an incarnation I heard in every species of life. So there must be a deer incarnation also. So he offered the grass of the deer incarnation and heard Bhagavatam. Therefore he remained his consciousness as a great devotee. And in the next lifetime he became Jadparat. So we shouldn't worry about leaving this body. We're going to forget our false ego. Because we do that all the time. At night we go to sleep. We forget who we are. And sometimes we have dreams, we like them a lot. We hope we don't wake up. Finally, I got what I wanted in my dream. In my wildest dreams, I couldn't dream such a nice dream. And we don't want to wake up, but then we wake up and we think, all right, now I got to go on. But no one is afraid of going to sleep, so no one should be afraid of leaving this body, which is exactly the same thing. Especially as it says here, if one is a devotee, then one will have a chance to continue on one's next lifetime in Krishna consciousness. One will still get prasadam at least. You don't have to worry about not getting prasadam. You get, if we're a little sincere, we'll get the association of devotees and we can continue on taking prasadam and chanting Hare Krishna and serving, doing devotional service, worshiping the deities. Everything will be there. But we'll just be a little more advanced than we were in our last lifetime. And probably a little bit more serious to get out of it, because we'll have to go through the whole thing again. Going back to school, learning simple things that we take for granted again now, getting baby teeth again, waiting for the baby teeth to fall out, getting big teeth, going to the dentist again, having a whole new set of teeth to drill on, So many getting having imagine having to be toilet trained again. It's like being a little puppy or a cat trying to put the cat on the place where you put the litter. Stay there. Oh. So, still, if we're born in the family of devotees, then we can start all over again, even if we have to get new baby teeth and everything else again. Hopefully we'll get a devotee dentist so they won't drill our teeth unnecessarily, just to make some money from us. In any case, Krishna will make arrangements for us so that we can make advancement even in our next lifetime until one eventually gets fully conscious of Krishna, and then one will be fully conscious and there'll be no more fear because one will actually understand and realize that one is eternal. They asked Prabhupada, what is it like to be a pure devotee one time? And he said, a pure devotee is fearless. I have no fear. So it would be nice. You wake up one day and you have no fear. Wouldn't everyone like that? No anxiety, no fear. Simply everything becomes nicer at every moment. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you. Maharaj, can you explain or how does one gets to know these impulses of the senses? Is this just through experience? Or how
do what about the impulse of the senses?
like their how do you say this? Their not needs but their
demands.
Because it's like more connected to the mind. It's more like subtle thoughts and such things. It's not so grossly like if someone hits you in the leg, you say, oh, okay, my leg hurts, but I need, it's pain. But how is this? How does one get to know this only through time, experience, or?
You mean how to avoid the impulses of the senses, get rid of them?
Yeah, by knowing them, to recognize them, and then to react.
Pretty difficult not to recognize them. When the senses are pushing us, it's pretty hard to say, well, I wonder what's going on. It's pretty obvious what's going on. But the real thing is, well, there's two things. One is Vishavinivartante, that Vishavinivartante, Niraharasi Dehinam, Rasavarjam Rasopyasya Pramdrishva Nivartate. There has to be a certain amount of faith that if we take our mind away from whatever it was thinking and put it back on Krishna, then at least we'll get rid of the misery of having to being forced to act according to the dictation of the senses. And some expectation that we might even get a higher taste eventually. And of course, as much as we get a higher taste, then to that extent the attraction of the pushing of the senses, what they promise us, becomes less alluring. As much as we can experience some higher taste. But that takes some time. And therefore, there's always a balance between the strength of the pushing and the strength of our taste. So therefore, we have to develop our intellect also, our intelligence, that if I dwell on the objects of the senses, I'm going to suffer. Let me withdraw my mind from the objects of the senses as quickly as possible. So it's a question of timing. Because from thinking comes feeling. If we let it go too long, the thought, then it's going to turn into feeling. And at some time, if we don't break it, then it'll turn into willing. So it's a question of, you know, experience. Now the problem is, if we go the way of trying to develop our spiritual consciousness, then it's likely we're not going to lose our memory and our intelligence. Because when people lose their memory and intelligence, that even the senses start pushing them, and they have this vague sense it might not be very auspicious if I follow it, but because they can't remember all the past times when they did follow the dictation of the senses, how much they suffered, Therefore, they don't really take it so seriously, what the consequences might be. They're only interested in immediate satisfaction. But when one develops some experience in Krishna consciousness and some transcendental intelligence, then one will realize if I don't stop it at a certain point, my intelligence and my memory is going to be dragged away. I'm going to suffer. And I won't even know why I'm suffering. So, therefore, by developing intelligence, someone will more quickly draw the mind away from these attractions, put it back on Krishna, and therefore one will be less prone to go from the stage of thinking to feeling and then to willing. And if one does, then if we keep up our sadhana, if we keep up our devotional practices, and gradually we realize I should stop this thinking, going to feeling, going to willing as soon as possible. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So when we get to the point when this thinking, feeling, willing, when we get to the point of willing, it usually just keeps going down and gets more entangled, like worse and worse. So how can it get to a breaking point? Like how can the intelligence and memory come back?
Well, that's why as soon as we chant Hare Krishna, engage in some devotional activity, as much as we put our mind and activities back in Krishna consciousness, then the intelligence comes back again. That's why Krishna says, Neha bi kramana shosti. We don't have to wait for our next lifetime. Even this lifetime we experience that. That we have a certain amount of understanding, and even though we may get bewildered and forget and, you know, still, when we start seriously practicing, that level of realization comes back rather quickly.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Maharaj. I want to ask you, what is the difference when an animal gets prasadam or when a human being gets prasadam in sense of spiritual progress?
Well, an animal is going to eat the prasadam. He could eat you also. It wouldn't make any difference to him. But when we eat prasadam, our possibility is to remember that it is prasadam, to see its relation to Krishna, and to try to taste what Krishna tastes like, and remember Krishna, and eat it with devotion, with care and attention, like we should do any other service. So, therefore, the more we eat it with care and attention in Krishna consciousness, then we remember Krishna. And the more our spiritual experience increases. For an animal, generally speaking, they can eat it, and they can think, thank Krishna, you're so kind. And although I'm a dirty animal, still you're so kind to give me this prasadam. She's going to eat it. And still, because it's spiritualized, to whatever extent it's spiritualized, they get some benefit. But not, they're not, they're not becoming Krishna conscious by eating it, although they may advance, at least in the material side of things.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.